I've got Senator David Craig on the program. We're going to talk about what the Senate did do and what the Senate didn't do. I will say, Senator Craig, I was watching some video, and it sure sounded a whole lot like the invasion of the screaming tantrum throwers during Act 10. Although not to the same level of bodies, but it sure looked similar, and I was hearing the same chants, shame, shame, shame. This is what democracy looks like, although I'm not exactly sure how it applied. But I think they were just waiting for a chance to get the old band back together.
Yeah, hey, Vicky. It was certainly a lot of reminiscing to 2011 and a lot of the crowds that we gathered. I came in just after Act 10, but I was there for the subsequent budgets, and yes, there was certainly a lot of similarities between yesterday afternoon and the good old days of 2011, unfortunately.
Yeah. So, and they were just basically shouting one-liners and non sequiturs, but it didn't have much to do with what was actually going on. So let's talk about what the Senate took up, what the Senate passed, and then we'll get to the pre-existing condition legislation that failed. And you voted against the pre-existing condition legislation. But first, what did get through the Senate? And we don't know if the Assembly is going to take everything exactly as is or reject it. But what are we looking at?
Yeah, and the Assembly's already acted on the stuff that we passed. So it's a done deal over there. Several really good pieces of legislation. So there's a couple of different areas of policy that we needed to make sure that we protected both from executive overreach and judicial overreach. So when you talk about all the things that we've done over the course of the past 8 years, from Act 10 to voter ID to right to work to prevailing wage reform, all the things that have taken so many battles from conservatives, we need to make sure that those are immune from executive overreach via abuse of the administrative rules process. And it goes beyond just administrative rules, all the way down to just documents that are produced by an executive agency that have the effect of law, but were never intended by the legislature to be public policy. And we've seen this in Republican and Democrat administrations, unfortunately, but it is truly the nature of the swamp, the executive branch creep, taking liberty with public policy that the legislature never gave it and having the effect of law in business and in individuals' lives every day across Wisconsin. So we passed a number of very positive reforms to make sure that at the end of the day, the legislature has oversight over how the executive branch is operating under the color of law. And that goes, again, anywhere from a continuous review of the administrative actions to the administrative code, and then also the requirement for disclosure of any type of document, guidance document, or other policy that an agency is promulgating, to make sure that the public knows the rules of the road, so that the legislature knows what policies these agencies are promulgating. That's a very, very important step. I know it sounds probably somewhat full of minutia to the average Wisconsinite, but it is unfortunately a very common problem that we've had, even with a Republican administration, to make sure that the executive branch is fitting inside its box. The second thing that we passed several provisions to do, but to make sure that the judicial branch doesn't overstep its bounds, and in cooperation with the Attorney General, to make sure that when we have litigation that the state is part of, to make sure that we do not have settlements that are occurring such that of those like the Environmental Protection Agency under the Obama administration, the sue and settle process, where you basically have an individual or a leftist group that sues the government. The executive branch agency is a willing partner in settling lawsuits, both via a checkbook from the government and also a surrender of public policy as part of the settlement, where there's not really an arm's length or good faith effort by the government to defend itself. They just are part of the leftist apparatus that just turns over and surrenders public policy and taxpayer dollars. So what we did is we said that the legislature at the end of the day should be the final check to make sure that no settlement occurs without legislative authority. That's going to be something that I think is going to pay great debt dividends and protect all the different pieces of legislation that could go under judicial scrutiny over the course of the next 4 years.
Okay, so that on that particular issue, on the litigation issue, there's the sue and settle aspect, which is essentially, let's just say, an environmental group sues the DNR. The DNR says, and sometimes the DNR could even potentially say, please sue us. They settle, and part of the settlement includes changing the rules. In fact, altering policy fundamentally, getting a judge then to sign off on it, and then shrugging their shoulders and saying to the legislature, there's nothing we can do about it. A judge said we had to do it.
Yeah, and so what what we heard a lot over the course of the last, 36 hours was, this is the legislature overstepping its bounds. It is the total opposite of that. For one thing, the legislature has almost plenary authority over what the attorney general does. Under the state constitution, our authority is very, very broad. When you talk about our ability to engage in sue and settle, again, this is an area where we're talking about taxpayer dollars that are going out the door. These are core functions of the legislature. And what we're protecting against is overstep by the judicial branch, overstep by the executive branch. We are protecting our core turf. And to a certain extent, Vicki, shame on us for having taken so long to get serious about this. This is something that many of us have been working on for some time. I'm glad we finally did it. I wish it had been done a little bit earlier. But it is something, again, that relates specifically to the core functions of the legislature and not what the liberals were trying to make it sound like, that we were power grabbing. We were
Let's go back to the first thing you were talking about, which was administrative rules and guidance documents. The law is created by the legislature. The executive agencies can create rules to implement the law. But what we have seen happen is that the executive agencies use the rulemaking process to alter the law. And essentially all you've done here is said, we're not going to let that happen anymore. We need to have oversight of this process because we're the ones creating the law. And we actually, just in the Walker administration, had to push back against executive fundamental changes the executive agency was making to laws like concealed carry. That was one of them. And changing the process so that you couldn't just have an executive agency, alter the intentions of the legislature. This is nothing that is overstepping by any means. It's tying things down even tighter so that we don't have executive overreach in the future.
Yeah, and so what you're describing is, the executive branch executes the law, the law that the legislature passes. We have a formal process under our statutes that allows for rule promulgation. And what we've seen time and time again is rules that go far beyond what the intent of the legislature was. And even worse, we get to these guidance documents. The problem with the huge problem with guidance documents is it's the force of administrative rule, but it circumvents that formal process. And that's something that we established long before the governor, Governor Walker, and the Republican legislature came in, but then improved on in Act 21 in 2011. And this is to make sure that, again, the executive branch agencies aren't going beyond the rule of law and are also not going beyond the checks and balances set up through the administrative rules process. Because under the law right now, we have a committee of the legislature chaired by Senator Steve Noss, the Joint Committee on Review of Administrative Rules, that when an administrative agency promulgates a rule, it goes to the legislature as it is, and the legislature has eyes on and hands on as that policy is implemented. And these guidance documents totally go around that process.
And they don't, even posted. We can't even see them. We just, you learn about the guidance documents when the agency decides to rely on the guidance documents to tell you you're in violation of some regulation or law. So, the idea that anybody would fight back against letting people know what's going on and preventing that from being used as a substitute for rulemaking, that's absurd, but that's part of the hyperbole that we've been seeing. And by the way, it's national hyperbole. I saw the national news talking about the Republicans' power grab in Wisconsin. It's not a power grab. It's wrestling power back to where it belongs in the hands of we the people, because you represent us.
Yeah, absolutely. When I look at what are the Alexander Hamilton, the founding of our country, talking about the judicial branch being the least harmful of all branches of government. This is the way that, our Constitution sets out, that, the people's houses, the Senate and the Assembly, should have the ultimate say-so. We have the ability to pass constitutional amendments with upon ratification by a statewide referendum, but we are the ones that make the law. I have no doubt that in both our state constitutional structure and in our federal constitutional structure, that the rubber meets the road with the legislature, not with the executive branch and not with the judicial branch. The duly elected legislatures are the ones that should be the central policy makers, and we are simply, again, doing is returning those core powers under the Constitution, whether it be the Attorney General or the rest of the executive branch with the rule process, bringing those powers back under the fold of the legislature, where unfortunately, those powers have gravitated away, but should have rightly been with us in the first place.
Last thing I want to ask about the pre-existing condition bill, which you voted against. And I think some people don't understand what the impact of that bill would have been. They just now think Dave Craig doesn't care about people with pre-existing conditions.
Yeah, I mean, so we've had inter-party conversations about this. Obviously, it was a very highly charged political issue throughout the governor's campaign. Yeah, what we're looking at is Obamacare. These are results of Obamacare in the state of Wisconsin. When we first ran for office 2010, 2011, and I was in a special election in 2011, I ran specifically on a platform to make sure that Obamacare isn't implemented here in the state of Wisconsin. And just because, the federal government, the Congress, has failed in fixing the situation that we find ourselves in, that should not make legislatures like ours around the country unilaterally disarmed and start adopting Obamacare policies into our statutory structures. The reality is we had a sound statutory structure for protecting individuals in these situations under what they call HRSP. And HRSP was a program that wasn't perfect, but it was a good baseline that said if you have a pre-existing condition, there's a way for you to obtain insurance. It was a very popular program, a little bit expensive, but there are things that the legislature can do to fix that. But at the end of the day, that was a Wisconsin-based solution for a Wisconsin problem that wasn't introducing a federal statutory language, a cram-down federal anti-federalism doctrine to fix that problem. And so what we're saying, Senator Kapinger and I, who brought forward an amendment that would have instead had Obamacare gone down via decision or by legislative action in Washington, D.C., and the pre-existing coverage, which exists in federal law right now, if that were to go away, then we would go back to HRSP, which was the law of the land in Wisconsin until Obamacare outlawed it in 2010 upon its passage. That was something that's an anti-federalism and I think unconstitutional power grab by the United States Congress in 2010. This is something that the state should be doing, and we should be doing it with state-based solutions. So when we put that amendment forward and that was rejected, I thought, I've got a campaign pledge to my constituents to make sure that we are not sowing Obamacare into the fabric of our state. It's a very it's an argument that is difficult to make given the relationship between the media and the Democrats. The media will always be there to push and push and push and say, if it's not pre-existing condition this time, it's going to be some other part of Obamacare the next time. The media will always be there to put obstacles in front of us to actually solving the real problem, which is the cost of care. And so what we were trying to do is to make sure that we have this Wisconsin-based solution. We're not implementing Obamacare here in Wisconsin. And then we can go and address the actual cost of care, the root problem of this, instead of being in constant reaction to the media narratives. Because we recognize, while people were saying this is going to take this issue off the table politically, I think that's absolute garbage.
Democrats all voted against it. Give me a break.
Absolutely.
They all voted against it and said it was going to deny people with pre-existing conditions coverage, and the media was repeating that lie. This was never going to be a win-win for Republicans, this piece of this pre-existing condition legislation. You're not going to win on this. The Democrats, it could have been perfect, Dave, and the Democrats still would have voted against it simply because they were going to deny Republicans any kind of talking point on this at all, because that's what we're all about now at this point.
And And the insidious problem with Obamacare is we know it's the backdoor to single payer, and it's designed for the system to devolve into a situation where politicians gravitate more and more towards single payer because it is in a death spiral. This is how it was designed, and in no less part as it's incorporated into the states to make the state healthcare systems devolve through that death spiral also. So that's what I'm saying. When I'm saying that it's pre-existing condition today, it's just going to be something else tomorrow. The fiscal pressure is always going to be there to pour more and more government resources into a problem, which will just suck up more resources and more resources and more resources. And that's because it's by design under the federal law to be in a death spiral so that we're pushed ever constantly more towards single payer. And at some point, Republicans and conservatives have to get up and say, you know what, we're going to do the hard work. We're going to talk about the facts, the statistics, the fact that Obamacare has been the law of the land for the last 8 years. And despite all the promises from the liberals and the socialists, premiums are more expensive. Physicians are less and less able to assist individuals. People are being rushed through their physician visits much more rapidly than they used to. And this is all in response to bad federal policy. And we just have to recognize, as conservatives and Republicans, we have to stand up and start fighting this stuff and identifying what the root problem is and stop being on the defense from when the media and the liberals try and accuse us of being the problem with not adopting Obamacare and all the other false accusations that they throw at us for why the cost of care keeps rising.
Senator David Craig, I really appreciate you coming on the program today.
Hey, thanks, Vicki.
Good to have you. All right.